I'd like to call the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, February 2015. Let the record show that we do have a quorum. We have three bills on our agenda today, and Senator Bonhoff, we're glad that you're here to present Senate File 472. So whenever you're ready, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I'm proud to be here presenting Senate File number 472. This is our first stop, so I do have an author's amendment. I have the A2.
Okay. Do members have that in their packet? Yeah, members have the A2 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like that. All those in favor of the A2 author's amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Bonhoff, to your bill.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, when I first became chair of the Senate Higher Ed Workforce Development Committee, I was invited to come and speak to the Workforce Center Council staff. And so in that conversation, I became more and more impressed with their knowledge and ability with regard to career counseling. And so in that conversation, an idea was born. I said, based on what I was hearing from them, you guys could be a great resource to augment the counselors in our K-12 situation. What do you think? And they were just wildly enthusiastic. And so I tell you that as background because 2 years ago, I offered a bill that this committee passed and was passed in Senator Tomasoni's finance bill that set up a pilot whereby the Workforce Center staff went into school districts in four different locations. And so I'm joined today by Ann Kilzer from the Minnesota Workforce Council Association, who is in support of this bill. What this bill does is it takes that very successful pilot and expands it to a statewide basis. We know that we hear both the disconnect between our industry partners saying that they have a skills gap. We hear about the concern around making sure our kids go into the fields where we have the most demand. And the worst of all is we hear about the terrible shortage of counselors that we have in our Minnesota K-12 system. So this bill is not the silver bullet to that problem. We believe there should be more counselors. We believe there's many things we should do to confront all those challenges. But we have the capacity to leverage the workforce centers in a much broader way and use their strong career professionals to augment the services in our K-12 system to actually go in and provide counseling in our schools around college and career readiness. So Senate File 472 as amended, and first of all, members, the amendment is very brief. It allows inclusion of charter schools, it strengthens the reporting requirements, and most importantly, it changes the funding mechanism from the Workforce Development Fund to the General Fund. But the bill requires workforce councils in each workforce service area to work with the local school districts to assist high school students in selecting careers of interest. It identifies strategic industries, high growth in demand occupations. It gives some school district requirements to how to work with the workforce center professionals. There's an allocation formula that makes sure that the resources are shared between metro and rural. It actually gives a slight bent with that formula to the rural communities. And then makes sure that we find out what did we get for our money. It directs deed to provide a report telling us how many students were served and what the results were of serving those students. So that is the overview, and now I'd like to turn it over to Ann Kilzer.
Ms. Kilzer, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Ann Kilzer, Director of the Minnesota Workforce Council Association, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak about this important bill. I believe in your packets you have a copy of the report of the four pilot projects to date and the results from the funding that was provided in 2013. And you should also have a map of the workforce service areas. The four pilot projects to date are in Stearns, Benton, rural Minnesota SEP, Hennepin, Carver, and Northeast Minnesota. Youth development is economic development. In order to make sure that Minnesota stays economically and globally competitive, all young people need to understand and fulfill the skill needs of the state's economy. Employers throughout the state are looking for short-term and long-term solutions for their needs for employees. Minnesota needs all hands on deck to fill positions left vacant by the droves of impending retirements and to meet the demands of our evolving economy. Despite economic growth, youth unemployment rates remain high. Unfortunately, many young people aren't getting accurate or up-to-date career information, don't have access to career mentors or other employment services, and may not be aware of job opportunities in their communities. Connecting youth to careers and corresponding additional education needs to be a priority. Education needs to be a priority of the workforce development system, as it is essential for the future economy of our state. And you understand this. In 2013, as Senator Bonoff mentioned, the pilot project was funding, or pilot projects were funded. You said it better. Also in 2013, the legislature passed the world's best workforce legislation, which, among other things, requires school districts to assist all students by no later than ninth grade to explore college and career interest aspirations and develop a transition plan to post-secondary education or employment. As we are well aware, however, the demands on Minnesota's public high school counselors are intense, with our average student counselor ratios higher than most states. But there is help to be found by levering resources. I've provided a report on the pilot projects, and the results have been impressive. So far, the four sites have served 1,516 youth through individualized services and 6,495 through group activities by leveraging existing staff knowledge and resources. As you'll see from a quote on the bottom of page 3 of the report, it is our experience that counselors are very happy to have this assistance from partners in the public workforce system. The legislation Senator Bonoff is putting before you today would allow for these partnerships to be implemented in all 16 workforce service area regions of the state. All of our members are very excited about these potential partnerships and more than willing and ready to provide these services. We strongly appreciate your support of this initiative, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kilzer. Any comments or questions for the witness? Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonoff, could you tell me now, do these folks, do they have a regular schedule? They go into the various schools, like in rural Minnesota, they go to different schools different days and spend so much time at each school to help the students, or do the students go to them? How does that work?
Senator Bonoff?
Mr. Chair, in the bill, it actually does direct the Workforce Center employees to go into the schools themselves, and it then directs the school districts to provide space whenever possible for them. But do you want to add to that?
It can also vary case by case. We do provide services in the workforce centers as well, but under the funding that was provided in the pilot projects, it does allow for the outreach to the schools rather than vice versa.
Senator Dames.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Will all schools receive this service, or just schools that request it, or how will that work?
Ms. Kilsner?
Mr. Chair and members, the way it would work is each of the 16 workforce service area regions would receive funding, and then they would reach out to all the school districts within their region to offer services. Their ability to do so would depend on what the schools requested from them and also the resources that they had available. But it would serve all regions of the state under the way the bill is drafted.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, follow-up to that. Senator Dames, it's my intention with the bill that it would serve every school. And so I originally wanted that to be spelled out in the language, but followed the lead of Ms. Kilzer to make it permissive and make sure we put enough funding so that it would actually offer the capacity.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Senator Bonoff did consult with us, and the funding that's under her bill would allow us to do outreach to all schools.
Good. Senator Bonoff's timing's good, too, today, because we had several counselors visiting, many of us, I think, as well. So very good. Any further questions for Senator Bonoff? If not,
this concluding comment,
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I believe you'll see a similar proposal that Senator Saxhog will bring forward, and so I just want to support all these initiatives because I think that we can work together and find a way to take this and bring it to as many places as possible. And lastly, for the counselors who happen to be here, we are certainly not saying that this work will replace their tremendous service.
Very good. Okay. Senator Bonoff would move that Senate File 472 as amended be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff.
Members, then we have two more bills. Our intention is to hear the proposals and take testimony today. We will not be adopting any amendments at this time. Although we have already agreed to some changes, I would like to thank the stakeholders for their hard work to this point. Our plan is to come back with an amendment that would encompass all of the worked out language. Also, before we get started, I will note that we have about a little over an hour left. We'll be sticking to the scheduled testifiers and encourage you to be as brief and direct as possible. Any additional comments or others wishing to be heard may submit written testimony to the committee, please. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Vice Chairman Schmidt, and we'll take some testimony on these next two bills.
All right, Senator Sparks, up first we have Senate File 736.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to have a discussion regarding Senate File 736. The world has changed dramatically since we started regulating landline telephones, and it continues to change at a rapid pace. The ways we communicate and the technologies we use are diverse and growing. Considering the changes in the telecommunication industry, it seems reasonable that we reevaluate the way we regulate the participants in this industry. I would like to note that we have been working on this bill for several years now. This is not a new issue to obviously myself or members of this committee. We have listened and reformed our proposal, and we are here today with a 3-page bill rather than the 50-page that we had last year. We continue to listen, but I think you will hear from testifiers that we are close and it is time to deal with this issue and pass a bill this legislative session. There are a number of parties interested in being heard on this legislation, and we want to make sure all their voices are heard so that we get this bill right, members. With that, I would like to turn it over to Carrie Rice to talk a little bit more about the proposed legislation, and then also want to make sure we have time to hear from other folks that have issues with the bill, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Ms. Rice, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Carrie Rice. I am the Regulatory and Legislative Affairs Manager for Inventus Telecom, a consolidated communications subsidiary. Inventus has its Minnesota operations based out of Mankato. We also have offices in Duluth, Edina, Rochester, and Plymouth. I want to tell you a little bit about how we operate as a telecommunications company in this state because I think it's relevant to this legislation. First of all, we operate 3 incumbent local exchange companies in the state. These are the companies that would be able to take advantage of this legislation. We're also a competitive local exchange carrier. In fact, we operate 3 competitive local exchange carriers in the state. These are companies that have overbuilt the exchanges of larger companies such as CenturyLink and Frontier, who would also benefit from this legislation. In short, Inventus has a part to play in almost every aspect of the telecom world in Minnesota right now, and we do support this legislation. I'm also before you today as a representative of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance and its member companies. I'm proud to serve as the volunteer chair of this legislative committee. So now that you know who I am and who I represent, I'll walk you through the bill and what it does and does not do. The most important thing to know about this bill is that it is not carte blanche deregulation. This language is carefully crafted to put in place a process by which a local exchange carrier, an incumbent local exchange carrier, could demonstrate to the Public Utilities Commission that its serving areas are truly competitive. Again, speaking as both an incumbent and a competitor, this process would enable incumbents to be regulated on the same basis as those against whom they compete. This bill does not remove any consumer protection provisions. All rules and regulations pertaining to 911, the telephone assistance plan, the telephone equipment plan, to all other aspects of public safety, slamming, cramming, your choice of long-distance provider, all of these will remain applicable after a grant of market-based regulation. We heard this message quite strongly in our previous year's attempts that Senator Sparks alluded to, and we want to be quite clear. After a showing of effective competition, we desire only to be regulated on the same basis as our competitors, and that includes all applicable consumer protections. I want to address one other important issue that this bill does not do. It does not remove or diminish an ILEC's obligation to serve any requesting carrier in its exchange territories. This is commonly referred to as a carrier of last resort obligation. Being a carrier of last resort is linked to our federal obligations as eligible telecommunications carrier, or ETC. It has never been the intent of this legislation or of the MTA to remove this obligation. We do not intend to exit markets as a result of a showing of competition, merely to reduce outdated regulatory burdens. And that's the crux, really, of what I think this bill does. It recognizes the evolution that the telecom marketplace has undergone in Minnesota. This bill acknowledges that Minnesota telecom statutes have not kept pace with the change that's happened since the Telecom Act of 1996. That happened 19 years ago, the same year I gave birth to my daughter. I can't believe those were all so far away. But our state statutes haven't changed in over 20 years. We need to rectify that and make the law keep up with the marketplace. The Telecom Act was successful in making our marketplace competitive because it opened up the markets to companies like my competitive affiliates. Overseeing the relationship between incumbent providers and competitors is a vital role of the Public Utilities Commission, and this bill maintains that. The PUC will continue to have oversight of wholesale relations between carriers, and that also will not be diminished in any way whatsoever. So ultimately, the question will come to why should you adopt Senate File 736? How will the citizens of Minnesota benefit from relieving incumbent providers of regulatory oversight? Just as they have benefited from competition, as will be demonstrated in the process before the Public Utilities Commission, they'll also benefit from every provider operating under the same set of rules and guidelines. Companies will have increased flexibility to respond to customer demands and will be able to more effectively compete, all while maintaining consumer and wholesale protections. That ends my testimony on the bill, and I'm happy to take any questions if you like.
Well, thank you, Ms. Rice. And at this stage, are there any questions among committee members? Thank you, Ms. Rice. We may call you back up if there are questions. At this stage, if we could have testimony from Department of Commerce, Department of Public Safety, and the Attorney General's Office, if you could step up to the testimonies table. If you could, sir, state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Grant for the Department of Commerce. And I want to thank the Chair and Senator Sparks for the opportunity to testify on Senate File 736. The Department has had the opportunity to meet with proponents on the bill over the course of the last week or so, and we spoke with Senator Sparks yesterday about our concerns and have additional meetings set up with proponents in the near future. So we are anxious to work with parties on this bill and see if there's a way that we can move forward. However, the Department is opposed to Senate File 736 as written. The following are our major concerns with the bill. First, in the area of consumer protections, there are additional provisions in Chapter 237 that the Department believes ILEX should be subject to that are the provisions that are not spelled out in Subdivision 2 as the bill is currently written. In terms of the process timeline at the Public Utilities Commission, the Department understands the need for regulatory certainty and a swift timeline for objection and review. However, we are concerned that the timeframes in Section 4 are too short. Parties need more than 20 days to reply to a petition, and the PUC should have more than 60 days from the date of filing to make a final determination. Next, the evaluation criteria for petitioning a local exchange carrier. Factors or criteria are needed to determine whether or not the PUC can grant the petition, not just a percentage threshold. And again, that's something we can hope we can work with the author and proponents on. And finally, in spite of Ms. Rice's statements regarding carrier of last resort, there is no clear provision for carrier of last resort in the bill as it currently stands. In addition to these concerns with the bill as it's written, the Department would respectfully request that the following provisions be considered as part of any telecom package to come out of committee. First, with regard to PUC investigative authority, we believe that the PUC should have the authority to investigate rates if a complaint is filed. The Department is open to discussing with the author and the proponents of the bill what that would look like exactly. Regard to service quality standards, we believe that Centrelink and other incumbent carriers to the agreement made through 2016, which in return for pricing flexibility holds the company to certain agreements, including service quality standards, and we believe that ought to be true for all companies. We have worked hard over the last year on the issue of rural call completion, and I know it's an issue for rural members of this body, we want to make sure that any bill that emerges this year addresses that issue as well. We also believe that consumers should have transparency on their billing statements. Language to clarify telecommunications statements would help alleviate consumer confusion and frustration and provide consumers with the information they need to find a plan and service that works for them. Again, Mr. Chairman, we're anxious to work with Senator Sparks and proponents over the next several weeks to see if we can resolve these differences.
Well, thank you, Mr. Grant.
Thank you.
Any questions among members at this point? Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Hello, sir. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name and proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, my name is James Canaday. I'm here from the Minnesota Attorney General's office. I'm an assistant attorney general and the manager of the Residential Utilities and Antitrust Division. The office opposes the bill, and I would start with a couple of simple responses to what I've heard already today. First, you've been told this isn't deregulation. I would say this is price deregulation, and that's an important point. Second, you've been told that this does not repeal consumer protections, and I would say that rate regulation is an important, arguably the most important, consumer protection. And you've also heard that we're only taking carriers to the same level of regulation that their competitors are at. I think there's an important conceptual issue involved in that statement. I think that arguably CLECs are at the level of regulation they're at because wireline carriers were at a higher level of regulation. That is going to change with this bill. So I'll briefly get into just a little bit more detail, but I know that we have some time issues today, so I'll leave maybe questions if you want to hear more about this. One of the main concerns of the Attorney General's office is the competition standard in this bill, and there are consumer protection issues that you're going to hear about from a number of the people who are going to testify today. I also share those concerns, but I'm going to focus on the competition standard because I don't think you're going to hear about that from anyone else. The competition standard is in Subdivision 4 of the bill, both as it currently stands and as amended. They're slightly different, but my concerns apply to both versions. In short, this bill would enact a competition standard for telecom that does not apply to anyone else. And the Attorney General's office does not believe that telecom should have their own standard to measure competition. Essentially, competition is measured, and companies are allowed to elect this form of regulation and are, in fact, the PUC is compelled to grant it based on market share. And market share alone is not an effective measure of competition. There's an established body of antitrust law and economic principles that tell us how to measure competition. In the arena of telecom, the DOJ and the FTC and the FCC have addressed the issue of competition numerous times in the last several years. And they have determined that wireless and voice over IP carriers are not effective competition for wireline carriers. So what this bill does is simply look at market share, which is not an effective measure of competition. And based on this 50% threshold, there are differing levels of information that needs to be provided in the petition. But in any event, that is the way that competition is measured. That's not sufficient. I can provide additional information if the committee wishes about product market and geographic market issues that are related to the competition issue, but my overall comments address that. Just briefly, because I'm anticipating what you're going to hear from the other consumer advocates who are going to testify, so let me just give you the list of issues as I see them. There are potential issues with the provider of last resort issue, obviously, affordability protections, logistical issues as to how issues are handled with termination of the existing A4 plans, service quality issues, and issues related to rate changes in terms of service that we see in terms of consumer protection issues with this bill. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Canaday. Any questions at this stage? All right. Well, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right. Do we have Ms. Mines from the Department of Public Safety here? All right. Welcome to the committee. Again, if you could state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Jackie Mines. I'm the director of Emergency Communication Networks, a division of the Department of Public Safety. And after clarification of the issues surrounding Carrier of Last Resort and 911 that was clarified by Carrie Rice today, our division does not have any further concerns.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Mr. Elwood, if you'd like to approach the testifier's table. Thank you. Again, if you could state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, and today I speak both on behalf of Legal Aid and also as a member of a coalition consisting of AARP, the Minnesota Community Action Partnership, the Metro Independent Business Association, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and a coalition of CLEC carriers represented by two of the testifiers you'll hear subsequently. Before I dive into specifics, and I won't be very long here, I would like just to provide a context for this whole, my remarks and this whole endeavor. You know, there's no question that we are in a transition in the telecommunications world. You'd have to have gone back to the 80s in the hot tub time machine not to know that. But the reports of the death of landlines have been greatly exaggerated. The fact of the matter is, and this is statistics from the companies themselves, they still serve 1.3 million access lines, which conservatively translates to over 2 million Minnesotans. 2 million. And many of those Minnesotans that we're talking about are clients of Legal Aid, the elderly, people with disabilities, and the economically vulnerable. Those 2 million Minnesotans still use landlines for one of two reasons. One, they have no choice. And two, and maybe more importantly, they do have a choice. And they choose to keep their landlines because of the affordability, reliability, and service quality that they offer. And so that's these Minnesotans that we're talking about cannot be left out and not be lost in this transition. Now to the delete-all. The MTA and CenturyLink did not involve us in their deliberations in putting the initial bill together, nor did they really provide us with a copy of the delete-all before it was made public to the House committee yesterday and what's put on here in the Senate. But I can say with confidence that the delete-all is a significant improvement over the bill as introduced. We are especially pleased that the Public Utilities Commission's jurisdiction has been restored. Compliance with most of Chapter 237 is now required, and that there are appropriate safeguards to ensure that the PUC's intervention is still there if the competitive test that granted CLEC status is no longer being met. So those things are really excellent. And with these changes, Senate File 736 really offers a framework for a workable approach, and we agree with Senator Sparks, Chair Sparks, that this is the year to get this done. But that said, there's a bunch of, absent some weedy details and quibbles that we'll talk about in the negotiations, won't bore you with today, but there are still several major problems, serious problems, that we need to be addressed before there would be peace in the telecommunications valley. First, as we've heard over and over again, with all due respect, there really is no provision to ensure carrier of last resort. Second, there are no affordability protections for basic service. And that is the thing that is most precious to our clients and those who are elderly, have disabilities, or are economically vulnerable. Third, as set forth in our basic statute, Section 237.011, our telecommunications goals, we need to further those goals of maintaining and improving quality of service. I don't think this bill gets there yet, and we're going to need to go there. Fourth, we need to ensure that while we are modernizing our consumer protections as we are modernizing all the other aspects, I think this whole thing is premised on creating a level playing field among competitors. I would be here to tell you today, I think we also need to create a level playing field between the companies and consumers, because I don't think that field is level today. And finally, as has been mentioned, but I do want to emphasize it, the criteria triggering the CLEC treatment really needs to be beefed up. It has to actually measure, is there competition where I can buy service, where I can buy my phone service, not in a broad region where I might not even have a competitor. Second, it needs to take into account the impacts of the change on granting that petition to elders, persons with disabilities, and those who are economically vulnerable. And third, it needs to give more discretion to the Commission to provide other factors that are relevant that may not be enumerated. All that said, this could well be the year and should be the year that we finally put this contentious issue to bed. I look forward to working with the author and the proponents on a final product that we can all support that fairly balances the interests of consumers and the competitors. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you, Mr. Elwood. Any questions at this stage for the testifier? All right, well, thank you. And if we could have Ms. Hollick approach the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
And if you could state your name for the record, welcome to the committee.
This is Pamela Hollick, and I'm the Associate General Counsel for Level 3 Communications. I handle state and regulatory public policies for the company in over 14 states in and around the Midwest Territory. Level 3 Communications is a competitive local exchange carrier. So we are in competition with many of the companies like CenturyLink today. We are both a competitor and we are also a consumer purchasing services from CenturyLink. Over the last 15 years here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul market, we've invested over $145 million in our network. We're the type of company that deploys the broadband facilities directly to our end-user customers, putting buildings lit with fiber so that customers can purchase broadband data, internet, voice, cloud computing services, and the latest and greatest of security services from companies that are in the competitive telecommunications marketplace. So with that background, let me explain to you that I want to set a framework for what our concerns are, and we have three basic concerns with this bill. As we look at the bill, what we're most concerned about is preserving the Commission's jurisdiction over wholesale services. That is, what we purchase from the incumbent carriers, how all the carriers connect their networks so that traffic can traverse seamlessly, so that consumers that purchase services from one company can connect with the other company. The first bill that was introduced was woefully lacking in that. The delete all, we think, gets us closer to there. So I am cautiously optimistic that after the years of working on this bill, we're getting closer to resolution. And with a little more time and a little more effort, I actually think you could get all of the people, all the stakeholders together in the room to come up with a consensus bill that balances the needs of carriers like CenturyLink and Avantis, along with companies like mine, the competitive local exchange companies, and the consumers to make sure there's adequate protections. What you want to do is not deregulate or modernize for the sake of doing it, but do it in those areas where competition can replace regulation. So you need vibrant competition for prices and services in order to do that, which is why the competitive test that the Attorney General and the Department of Commerce spoke so critically of and concerned about is so important in the bill. And that's the second concern. I think we're getting closer there, but I think that piece needs a little more work. And then the last thing that I look forward to working with the bill's author and the interested stakeholders on is this notion of subsidies. For a long time, when you have been a monopoly provider, you get certain subsidies in order to provide service. If you are now regulated or not regulated because there's competition, you should no longer have those subsidies. So competition and subsidies don't go hand in hand. And we need to make sure we look at that framework and adjust it accordingly as we go forward. So look forward to it. I think this is the year to pass some modernization. This is a reasonable balance step, and we can get there if we make some more provisions and get everybody at the table, all the stakeholders together, to discuss it. happy to answer any questions.
All right, well, thank you, Ms. Hollick. Any questions at this stage? Well, please stick in the room. We may have some for you.
I will. Thank you.
And maybe towards the end here, we have two more testifiers scheduled. If Ms. Heaston and Ms. George could approach the table right now. And Ms. Heaston, you can proceed. And again, if you don't mind stating your name for the record.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, Donna Heaston. I am here today on behalf of Integra. I am the Regulatory Affairs Manager for Integra. And as you heard, a CLEC, Competitive Local Exchange Carrier, like Integra, sometimes provides services over our own network. We certainly try to do that whenever possible, but often we are providing services as wholesale customers of the ILEX. And so as a telecommunications business, we share the ILEX interest in ensuring that the laws keep pace with advances in the industry. Like consumers, we value the Public Utility Commission's oversight of our carrier-customer or customer-carrier relationship with the ILEX. And while Integra has had a limited opportunity to collaborate with proponents of the bill, we still feel there is work to be done, and we do have some remaining concerns. So just very briefly, I'll go through those. Rather than simply relying on a definition of a facilities-based provider, we think the commission should play a role in deciding in each case whether a particular provider is truly a viable alternative or competitor in an area. As to process, we do expect realistic timeframes for objecting parties and also for the commission. We don't feel as written that those are there today. And we don't support the competitive test as written. It's too broad. Criteria should be applied in all cases. And really, there are additional criteria that could add value that are not presented here, such as some consumer protections. So if this change is going to be meaningful and thoughtful, all sides should really be expected to work openly and willingly together so that we can come to an acceptable result for all parties. So as I said, we really do have a lot of work to do, but we as Integra really appreciate the opportunity to continue to be part of this conversation. We look forward to it. Thank you for letting me speak today.
Thank you, Ms. Heaston. Ms. George, if you don't mind stating your name for the record.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mary Jo George, and I'm the Advocacy Director at AARP. We, too, appreciate the opportunity to express our comments on Senate File 736. For many of our 650,000 AARP members in Minnesota, telephone communication is a basic necessity, allowing older people to maintain social contact, preserve health and safety, and gain assistance in emergency. After we have reviewed the delete all, we too believe it is a better bill than the original bill as introduced, but still we think it has a long way to go. One of our concerns is really with the basic definition of what we call the facility-based provider. And, you know, not to get into the details, but as we read it, there is still no carrier of last resort, and I think you've heard from others about that. What that really means is, to us, there is no guarantee that a consumer would actually have access to a landline telephone service. You know, we really believe the definition has to include both wireline and wireless service, because wireless service is not considered a substitute for older Minnesotans. The issue is of particular concern to people over 65 because they are more likely than any other group to have both landline and wireless, and do not cut the cord. In fact, research from the CDC shows that about 86% of older adults choose both the landline and the wireless. Why is this so? Several reasons. One, because we know there are still large areas in Minnesota that either do not have cell phone service or where the coverage is very spotty. Secondly, many older Minnesotans disproportionately rely on health monitoring and medical alert devices and other safety features that oftentimes are not supported by cellular or wireless service. Thus, we believe landline consumer protections in state law are still needed. Furthermore, we are concerned with the criteria. Other folks have mentioned that. We are concerned that a carrier can elect an alternative form of regulation without regard to reliability and cost of services. And so we do think, as Legal Aid had indicated, that many Minnesotans on fixed incomes would not be able to afford basic phone service. Lastly, we are pleased that there is some oversight of the PUC, but we do not think it's strong enough in terms of its oversight of quality and reasonable prices and termination of services. Again, AARP really wholeheartedly does support the use of alternative technology, but when that alternative technology becomes the only option, we have to have the same sort of reliability, affordability, and accessibility that we've come to expect with phone lines, telephone lines. So we, too, would like to work with all the stakeholders to get a good bill. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. George. With that said, any questions among committee members at this stage? As Senator Sparks had mentioned, this bill is going to be laid over today, and we will have an opportunity to discuss this at a later date. I guess there's a challenge before us. So, Senator Nelson, please.
Oh, just a comment, if you're ready.
Sure,
to
please.
Well, I found the testimony really interesting today, and I was very encouraged to hear that there's still a lot of work to be done and that everyone is committed to that. I think it's dangerous when we have any regulations that have not been updated for the new technologies that exist. And we're seeing that a lot in the legislature this year. We're wrestling with a lot of issues where the policy is trying to keep up with the new technological advances. And I see this bill as one step to do that. And so, Senator Sparks, I applaud you for doing this and wish you great success as you continue on and make sure that we have a bill that is actually going to allow our policies to reflect the new world in which we live and still maintain the safeguards that we all expect. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Nelson, thank you for your comments. And again, that's why we're here today. You know, I appreciate the conversation. I think we addressed many of the issues that you heard today, and we're moving closer and closer, and we'll continue to do that to address the other issues while remaining committed to the goal of reform that more accurately reflects the telecommunication industry of today. I would just have members note, I think in your packet you do have a map that shows that 36 other states have modernized retail regulation. If you look at all of our surrounding states, they have done it. You know, back in 2000, 2004, or 6, Iowa phased in deregulation and saw no interruption of service to existing landlines. And in fact, many new services continue to expand. And Senator Schmidt, I don't need to tell you, I know you're our resident broadband expert, but if those local companies do take those federal broadband build-out dollars, they cannot drop certain areas. So I think there's some safeguards there. But having said that, I think that many of you know my style. I've worked on many tough issues with Deputy Commissioner Grant. We had a very nice meeting in my office yesterday. Mr. Elwood and I go way back to some debates in the Commerce Committee, but we've been able to find peace in the telecom or the Commerce Valley, and we'll continue to try to find some areas of agreement. I'd like to thank, too, my co-authors, Senator Dame, Senator Coonan, Senator Rood, that's not here today, but hopefully we'll be back within the next few weeks. That's something everyone can be happy with. We can pass a bill that can get that done. But having said that, Mr. Chair, I would move that we just lay Senate File 736 on the table at this time.
Well, thank you, Senator Sparks. As you suggest, we will lay Senate File 736 on the table, and I'm sure this will come before us again. So transitioning, we have Senate File 895 before us.
Okay, now to the easy one, members. Senate File 895. Again, we just want to have the conversation here today, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 895 is a new issue for us, but is another bill that reflects the changing technologies and growth in consumer use of Internet-based services to meet their telecommunication needs. This proposal is meant to offer regulatory certainty for companies as newer technology-based services continue to grow and expand in Minnesota. Like the previous bill, we are listening and working with interested parties, but want to take this opportunity to hear the testimony in preparation for a possible action later this session. In the interest of time, again, I just want to make sure that we have plenty of time to hear from the testifiers and explain why this proposal is in the right direction, or those that oppose it, obviously, we want to hear from them as well. So I would just invite the testifiers. I believe Mr. Richards and Mr. Huntington would like to come forward and talk a little bit more about Senate File 895.
Gentlemen, welcome to the committee. If you could, Mr. Richards, state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairman Sparks, Vice Chairman Schmidt, and members. My name is Glenn Richards, and I'm the Executive Director of the Voice on the Net Coalition. Thank you for the opportunity today to express the Vaughn Coalition support for SF 895. VON's members include many of the leading internet communications companies, including Google, Microsoft, Skype, and Vonage. For the past 17 years, VON has been working with federal and state policymakers to advance regulatory policies that enable consumers, businesses, and government to enjoy the full promise and potential of internet protocol or IP communications. The companies in VON are developing and delivering the next generation of voice, video, and data communication services that can be used anywhere and everywhere that broadband is available, no telephone required. IP communications today is the dominant technology for users of communication services. According to a report recently released by the FCC, at the end of 2013, there were more than 852,000 interconnected VoIP subscriber lines in Minnesota receiving service from 116 VoIP providers. Of these, 465,000 were residential subscribers and 387,000 were business lines. IP communications has prospered in a largely unregulated environment. The Federal Communications Commission in 2004 found that IP communications between computers, such as Skype, should not be regulated at all. And in that same year, preempted state regulation of interconnected VoIP, which include VoIP services provided by cable companies. The FCC has, however, imposed public safety and consumer protection requirements on interconnected VoIP providers that are similar to those imposed on traditional phone companies, including a requirement to provide enhanced 911, protect consumer data, report service outages, and contribute to universal service. There is no federal entry or price regulation of VoIP. At least 29 states and the District of Columbia have codified regulatory safe harbors for VoIP or IP communications. These states recognize there is no benefit to imposing legacy phone regulation on IP. In a competitive market with low barriers to entry and low switching costs, entry and rate regulation has the potential to materially and adversely impact technological innovation, hinder the growth of open competitive markets, and place unnecessary costs on companies eager to deliver innovative products and services. By adopting this bill, Minnesota now has the ability to eliminate the threat of conflicting state regulation of VoIP and IP services to ensure that consumers in the state continue to have access to these transformative broadband applications, both current ones and those that have not been developed yet. It's critical that state and local regulation not burden such innovation. The FCC has created the uniform framework for the regulation of these services that applies in all 50 states. This bill recognizes and retains federal preemption of state and local regulation. I would very much like to briefly address arguments I think you will hear from the opponents of the bill. Number one, opponents of the bill will argue that the authority of the PUC and the Department of Commerce will be undermined by this bill because they will claim that they can regulate fixed VoIP services. That is incorrect. Based on the FCC's 2004 order, which is still the law, neither the PUC nor the Department of Commerce can regulate any form of interconnected VoIP. As I noted earlier, more than 100 companies provide VoIP services in Minnesota, and I strongly doubt any are licensed by or believe they are subject to the regulation of the Public Utility Commission. These companies offer great rates and services enjoyed by hundreds of thousands of consumers and businesses in the state, including this body based on the Cisco phones I saw on your desk, not because they're required by the PUC, but because they operate in a fiercely competitive market. Opponents are going to argue that this bill will undermine 911 services. That is incorrect. As noted earlier, the FCC requires interconnected VoIP providers to offer enhanced 911, the same 911 service provided by traditional wireline and wireless phone companies. VoIP providers are required to report location information for every customer and update that information as customers move from one location to another. VoIP providers also pay the same 911 fees required by other phone companies. Opponents are going to argue that the legislation is premature because the FCC is going to address regulatory classification of VoIP in the net neutrality decision expected to be issued sometime next week. In my opinion, the net neutrality decision will focus on broadband internet access providers, not VoIP services. However, we expect that FCC order to be issued within a matter of days, and we can easily confirm whether VoIP is addressed. Opponents are going to argue that oversight is necessary to prevent slamming and cramming by VoIP providers. As an initial matter, slamming by VoIP providers is technically impossible. The service requires special hardware and software. I am not aware of any cramming related to VoIP. VoIP services are typically provided in a fixed rate bundle packages. VoIP providers typically do not bill for third-party services, which create the most cramming complaints. For these reasons, the FCC has declined to extend slamming and cramming laws to VoIP. Finally, should VoIP providers engage in deceptive billing or advertising practices, the Minnesota Attorney General retains full authority to prosecute based on state consumer protection laws, the same as with any other business in Minnesota. Finally, certain carriers are going to argue today that the bill undermines the PUC's authority to hear interconnection disputes. To date, IP interconnection has been successfully accomplished through commercial negotiations without the need for regulatory intervention. In any event, the issue of IP interconnection and whether any regulation is necessary is for the FCC to decide, and that is, may be addressed by the FCC's net neutrality order. In conclusion, the Vaughn Coalition looks forward to working with you and any other policymakers in Minnesota to forge pragmatic solutions that enable consumers, businesses, and the economy to achieve the full promise and potential of VoIP and IP services. Thank you again for your time, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. Mr. Huntington, if you could, say your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Kevin Huntington, and I'm the owner of Metro Home Connection Realty. I'm here today to testify as a small business owner and job creator to ask you to support and pass this critical legislation as Minnesota seeks to foster a robust broadband infrastructure. To be clear, I'm not an expert in technology, but simply a small business owner whose business benefits greatly from the current state of and the continual improvement of broadband and IP-enabled services. When I started Metro Home Connection back in 2005 as a recent law school graduate, my goal, aside from not to practice law, was to get into real estate and provide a better service at a lower price for my residential real estate clients. Even then, I was able to do this by designing a company model that operated virtually, making it possible to connect with customers wherever they were at, and when office work was necessary, my virtual office consisted of a broadband connection and a smartphone. As I built my business, operating all across the metro, with a special emphasis in Eagan and the southern suburbs, my services have improved as I've been able to utilize wireless applications and other broadband IP-enabled services. For example, I now market my company and connect with my customers through Facebook and Twitter, two very effective platforms, which I guess nearly everybody here uses as well. I also regularly use communication tools such as Skype and FaceTime, as well as real estate-specific apps such as Zillow and Trulia. The expansion and enhancement of the broadband network in these and other IP-enabled applications have grown and developed at the speed of light. What was available to me 5 years after I started my business would have seemed like science fiction just 5 years before I started my business. Consumers want the best, most reliable, and fastest speeds when it comes to broadband, whether they're in the cities, the suburbs, or in greater Minnesota. The Minnesota legislature and the governor have taken great care, from my perspective, to roll back many outdated regulations and have wisely avoided adding new ones. Nowhere is this policy more important than in broadband and technology, where the pace of government has always struggled to keep up with the pace of innovation. Thank you in advance for taking up this important bill. As a small business owner, I encourage its passage and hope it is signed into law to provide some certainty in this important area of our economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Huntington. Any questions at this stage for these testifiers? All right, well, thank you, gentlemen. If we could have Mr. Radke and Alexi Madden approach the table. Hello, if you could state your name for the record, proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for allowing me to testify before you today on SF 895. My name is Alexi Madden, and I'm the Director of State Government Affairs for the Midwest for Tech America, powered by CompTIA, the nation's leading advocacy for the technology industry. Tech America is the public policy department of CompTIA, advocating before decision makers at the state, federal, and international levels of government. Representing technology companies of all sizes, Tech America is committed to advocating for our members on a myriad of issues, which is what brings me here today. Tech America stands in support of Senate File 895, a bill to exempt Internet Protocol and voice over Internet Protocol services from regulation by the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. Voice over Internet Protocol service, more commonly known as VoIP, is technology that allows users to convert voice or video communications into digital signal that travels over the Internet. These services act like a traditional telephone, but require broadband access instead of a legacy telephone line to work. VoIP services allow traditional communication to continually improve thanks to advancements in broadband technology that provide for the same reliable voice service, but also provide state-of-the-art internet connections as well. As the cost of the computer processing decreases and the demand for communications bandwidth increases, IP networks offer a more economical and robust means for providing communications connections than their traditional counterparts. Of course, the number one benefit of these services is the cost savings to consumers. By using this internet-based technology, users can reach other users anywhere in the world for a fraction of the cost of a traditional landline service. According to the 2014 annual report issued by Governor Dayton's Task Force on Broadband, the most recent data indicates that an estimated 88.9% of Minnesota households now have access to broadband at statutory goal levels, up from 82.7% one year ago. The majority of Minnesota residents now have the basic technology that can allow them to realize savings on communication services. To be certain, the exemption of IP-enabled services from the Public Utilities Commission's would incentivize private sector investment in new advanced broadband-based connections, particularly in rural areas that can be otherwise challenging to service. Specifically, rural consumers will benefit from voice competition with the extension of affordable broadband. This investment will allow for rural communities to connect to a world of remote job opportunities and change their economies to become an engine for higher-paying, information-age jobs. According to Tech America's annual report, CyberStates 2015, the definitive state-by-state analysis of the U.S. tech industry, Minnesota ranks 17th in tech employment with over 136,000 jobs originating in the tech industry. This number represents 5.8% of private sector workers in the state and provides a yearly payroll of $12.3 billion. The average tech industry wage clocks in at just over $89,000, which is 78% higher than the average private sector wage. It is clear to see that continued investment in technology is an investment in a strong and growing portion of this state's economy. As many as 30 states have moved to exempt these services from regulation, with at least three additional states filing legislation to do the same this year. These states have enjoyed the benefit of investment and innovation and are on the edge of communication technology. We have seen no deterrent to deregulation, but instead recognize that regulation of the industry will hinder competition and growth in this market. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak with you this afternoon. Tech America applauds the legislature's forward-thinking and fully supports the passage of SF 895. With its passage, industry can work to deploy new and innovative technologies and invest in the best infrastructure to deliver these services to consumers. I am happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. Any questions at this stage? All right. Well, thank you very much. Mr. Radke in the room today? All right. If not, we have some testimony from Mr. Grant and Mr. Canaday. If you could reapproach the testifiers' table. And again, if you don't mind stating your name for the record again.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Grant, and I failed to mention before, I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Energy and Telecommunications at the Department of Commerce. And thanks for the opportunity to testify on Senate File 895. We have a basic disagreement, I think, about whether or not the Commission and the Department retain authority to regulate VoIP or not. And it is our position that the FCC has not preempted our ability to do that, nor have they made a determination that fixed VoIP is a telecom service or an information service. So we maintain that we retain the ability to regulate VoIP as a traditional phone company subject to Chapter 237. One of the problems with this bill is that the definition of IP is so broad that nearly every telephone company could claim that they fit under the statute. An IP service would therefore be completely deregulated. Also under this bill, no state agency or political subdivision directly or indirectly could regulate these services, including quality and availability of service, or, as it says in the bill, any other aspect of VoIP or IP-enabled services. Also under this bill, VoIP or IP-enabled services are not subject to any requirements by any state agency concerning entry into Minnesota, in other words, the certification process that the commission currently maintains, concerns about rates, terms of service, quality of service, or availability. We believe that Senate File 895 would remove major consumer protections from VoIP regulation. We would have basically no jurisdiction over consumer complaints on any matter, including inaccurate billing, service termination, failure to obtain services, or fairness of rates. We'd have no ability to address cramming, slamming, or having third-party charges added on customers' bills. And we'd have no ability to require the restoration of service in a timely fashion in the event of a failure. Under this bill, IP companies could terminate services to customers without notice and for no cause, would have no obligation to serve customers in remote or high-cost areas, would have no obligation to provide the TAP program, the telephone assistance program, would not have to provide notice requirement for rate increases or locking customers into long-term contracts so that they can't change their carriers without a significant penalty. It would allow them to discriminate in favor of their own affiliates. And to the extent that IP companies are involved in the rural call completion problem, it would eliminate any state agency's ability to do anything about that. Finally, it would allow the disconnection of service to other carriers without approval, even if the disconnection would result in the end-use customers having their services terminated without their knowledge. And this could lead to real problems in the delivery of 911 services. And on that point, we believe that Senate File 895 has serious implications for public safety in Minnesota. The way the bill is currently written, it's unclear whether these companies would have to comply with state 911 requirements. The bill states that each local company could collect and remit TAM, TAP, and 911 fees. However, there is no statute defining local service for an IP provider. Since there's no certification process for IP providers, there would be no mechanism for the state to know what companies are operating within the state and therefore who should be obligated to provide 911 services. Finally, it's been mentioned that the FCC is about to rule on a number of these matters, and we believe that statement, those rulings could have a significant bearing on this bill in particular. If the FCC declares IP is a telephone service, this bill would directly contradict the FCC's ruling and remove regulation at the same time that the FCC may be regulating it more closely. Finally, Mr. Chairman, I'd note that the department has been asked for a fiscal note on this bill, and we expect to deliver that to the committee shortly.
Very well. Well, thank you, Mr. Grant. Mr. Candidate, welcome back. You could again state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Again, my name is James Canaday. I'm an Assistant Attorney General from the Minnesota Attorney General's Office, and I'm the manager of the Residential Utilities and Antitrust Division. On Senate File 895, I'll again try to be brief with my comments. Deputy Commissioner Grant did a good job of listing off a number of consumer protection, quality of service, and related issues. I will not repeat those, but I would join in those. We would ask the legislature to proceed carefully with this bill, and that is my bottom line of my request, proceed carefully, because it is a broad prohibition of future regulation in this area, and this area is changing rapidly. And the broadness of this bill would include a number of, an ever-increasing number of voice calls. It's voice, data, and video that we're talking about, but I would emphasize voice calls because more and more they are through IP technology. So I would emphasize two things, however. The first you've heard about, which is the impending FCC action. Everybody knows that's happening, but I would just consider that it's not only the action that we anticipate this week. I would say that, first of all, you're hearing predictions from various parties as to what that's going to be. I don't think anybody in this room yet knows what that's going to be. But even if we know tomorrow or in the next week, I would also just point out how quickly things have changed in this arena in the last 5 to 10 years. And I would predict, and I'm comfortable predicting, that they're going to continue to change at that pace. So we would caution the legislature about the broad prohibition of future regulation in this area now. The second thing I'd like to raise is a real-life example of a problem in this area. I testified yesterday in the House, and Mr. Richards, who spoke to you earlier, was there as well. And so I raised yesterday that I had recently dealt, and when I say recently, I mean in the last 2 weeks, with consumer complaints from two separate Minnesota citizens who are dealing with slamming of their voice over IP lines. And Mr. Richards said that that's technically impossible. And I will say to you that it's not. And I am dealing with two situations of that right now. And there are, I think, some definitional issues probably in both how we're both talking about this. That's one of the challenges of all of us making our comments brief. But I will just leave it at it's not impossible, and it's happening out there now. And I say that again because I caution you against prohibiting future regulation in this area. I'm not asking you today to regulate in this area or to change the slamming laws to specifically apply to this area. But in the future, that may be something that I could see as necessary based on what's happening today, and that's the basis of the concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Candidate. And for the benefit of those in attendance or listening, could you just offer a quick definition of slamming and cramming for folks?
Sure. Slamming is the unauthorized changing of long-distance service, typically. That's been going on for years in the wireline arena, and we have state statutes that prohibit that. And that is something that we are now seeing in the area of voice over IP technology, where consumers are being changed without their authorization from, in this case, managed voice over IP service to an alternative carrier without their permission.
Okay, thank you. Any questions at this stage, members? All right. Well, Senator Nelson, I think we anticipated your question there.
Yes,
so,
you did.
All right.
Thank you very much. I just have a comment
briefly
on that. I really appreciate that definition because I wasn't sure what that was. But let me just say, I believe that some of our credit cards are doing the same thing. I have constituents whose credit cards have been changed to different banks without their knowledge. So just throw that out
conversation
there.
For another day, perhaps.
Yeah, conversation
so,
for
all
another
right.
day. But
very well.
Similar problem.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Really appreciate it. At this stage, if Ms. Mines is still in attendance today, and Mr. Schiffman, if you could approach the testifier's table as well. Welcome back. And again, if you don't mind stating your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dana Wahlberg. I'm the 911 program manager for the state of Minnesota. I work for Director Mines in the Department of Public Safety Emergency Communication Networks Division, and she had to leave to catch a flight, so I'm pinch hitting for her. Our concerns focus on the language specific to 911 provisioning that is neither specified nor referenced in this bill. We'd like to see that VoIP service providers are subject to all operation and maintenance requirements with respect to the provisioning of access to 911 as defined in Minnesota State Statute Number 403. We acknowledge that there's language in this bill that specifically identifies the requirement for fee collection and remittance. But what is clearly not mentioned, and in reference to Mr. Richards' reference to your Cisco phones on your desk, these are all part of a multi-line phone system or a PBX system where you have to dial 9 to get an outside line. A number of years ago, in this, we fought hard in the Department of Public Safety to ensure that multi-line telephone systems were equipped with features and functionality to provide a callback number and a precise location to 911 call takers. And we've worked tirelessly to ensure that carriers have met that requirement. And the fact that that may be absent from this particular bill and give voice over IP service providers the option to think that it is not a requirement is frightening for us. We would certainly prefer that there's also specific reference to guide VoIP service providers to submit a plan to the Emergency Communication Networks Division detailing how it will provide 911 service to its customers in a manner consistent with the 403 statute and also with the associated Minnesota Legislative Rule 7580 in its entirety. And this would be with respect to 911 call routing, voice network, repair service, and the automatic number identification and automatic location information known as Annie and Allie to ensure that that's delivered with every call and according to the standards that are identified in statute and the associated rules. This is simply to ensure that whoever is providing business that their calls are being routed to the correct 911 call center in Minnesota and to ensure that we have a good number to contact the VoIP service provider in the event that we experience difficulties with the service. We've experienced situations in Minnesota where a 911 call from a VoIP service provider is answered by a national call center many states away from Minnesota, or in some cases in Ontario, Canada. And that's simply because a carrier has begun advertising and offering service and signing up customers, but they have not preceded that with a 911 plan or with connecting to the 911 network. So that becomes very problematic. And we don't necessarily know about those until something goes wrong and it comes back to us from a 911 call center where they encountered this type of situation. We certainly want to ensure that every startup provider, and not just the ones that are complying with us today, are understanding that there are explicit obligations to connecting to the 911 network beyond simply collecting and remitting fees. It's our desire to define all of our expectations rather than to leave them to interpretation or have service providers conclude that there are no requirements for 911. And that often happens with carriers who become new service providers and don't understand how 911 works. And that becomes even more concerning when Mr. Richards mentions that there's more than 100 and some VoIP carriers operating today in the state of Minnesota. I can tell you that we are not receiving fees from anywhere near that number. So we are very concerned. We're actively meeting with carriers and our colleagues at the Metropolitan Emergency Services Board to finalize some acceptable language that will mitigate our concerns and still allow this Senate File 895 to move forward.
Well, thank you, Ms. Wahlberg.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, Mr. Shiffman, if you could state your name for the record and proceed.
You bet. My name is Ken Shiffman, and I'm a senior counsel for Sprint Corporation, and thanks for inviting me here, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Sprint provides wireless service to over 55 million customers throughout the country, and we're very vibrant participant in the telecommunications market, and we are very excited to see the new measures being made in the market as far as transitioning to voice over IP services. We're going to be transitioning our wireless network to be able to utilize voice. It's called voice over LTE, which would be voice over IP over our wireless network. So we are excited that folks are taking a look at these laws and trying to encourage this type of progress as far as encouraging voice over IP networks. But we have one major problem with the bill as it's written. We believe, though, as a competitive carrier, we need the ability to have the Public Utility Commission be the referee on the field if we have a dispute with the incumbent telephone companies. And the way this bill is written right now, it just gives an all-out exemption totally for all Internet protocol services. So in our mind, any probably fair interpretation of the language as it's written, it would exempt the PUC from being that referee on the field when we have a dispute with a carrier that we interconnect with. The way the wireless system works is it's only wireless from your telephone to the tower. The rest of the system is a wireline system, and we have to connect our wires with the wires of the incumbent carrier, and so that's called interconnection. And when two parties interconnect, that allows calls to traverse from our network to the network of an incumbent carrier. And there are a lot of disputes between wireless carriers and incumbent carriers on how we interconnect our network and in what protocol we can interconnect in. Sprint has been very much an advocate of being able to interconnect our network in Internet protocol. And the gentleman from the Vaughn Coalition said, hey, don't worry about it. That's all being done on a commercial basis, and the FCC's got it taken care of. Well, I'm here to tell you today that that's not being taken care of at the FCC, and that we have had specific disputes at Sprint at state commissions around the country, Massachusetts, Michigan, Illinois, and others, where we have asked for IP interconnection from the incumbent carrier, and the incumbent carrier says, sorry, those laws don't apply here. That's internet protocol. You can't interconnect under federal law, Section 251 and 252, because we're talking about a different type of technology. We're talking about internet protocol. So I think it's very important that if this Senate file 895 bill is going to move forward, that we need to make sure that the exemption from regulation only applies to retail services, to retail VoIP services. And I know others have expressed concerns about that part of it, but I'm not here today to talk about those issues. What I'm here today to talk about is that if we do have this bill moving forward, we need to make sure that there's an exemption, that the exemption only applies to retail voice over IP or retail IP-enabled services. There's some claims also made by the proponents of legislation that 29 or 30 states have passed legislation like this. But there, in some of these other states, there are requirements that it only applies, that the exemption from regulation only applies to retail voice over IP or retail IP-enabled services. So that is true in Indiana. And Missouri explicitly contains language to ensure that the state commission can continue to enforce wholesale interconnection requirements, like those requirements that I talked about. Kind of the most telling indication, maybe, of some of the advocacy here as to why the proponents don't want to insert the word retail, is that in Indiana, where we do have it inserted, they're trying to ask the legislature to take that word out of there. And it's very important to make sure that if we're going to exempt voice over IP services, that the exemption only applies to the retail services. So to be clear, Sprint is not asking the Minnesota legislature not to modernize its telecom laws. We feel that it's appropriate to do so, but we want to make sure that the referee stays on the field and is there to monitor and to resolve any intercarrier disputes. One more thing is that I didn't get to testify on the previous bill. I just want to say that Sprint does have concerns about the previous bill, and they're similar to what Ms. Hollick said regarding the subsidy situation. So if there is deregulation as proposed, we would say that that the carriers not have access to a state universal service fund, and to also reduce their access charges in the same manner that access charges are being reduced at the FCC level. So I do appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you for this chance, and I'd be open to any questions that you may have later.
Well, thank you, Mr. Schiffman. We really appreciate your testimony. Members, we are running out of time here today. I think we've already passed our allotted time, but we do want to have a couple more testifiers. If Mr. Elwood and Ms. Hollick could reapproach the testifiers table. And again, just in the interest of time, if you're able to make your remarks brief, we will be continuing this conversation beyond the committee today. So again, Mr. Elwood, if you could restate your name.
Mr. Chair and members, Ron Elwood, Legal Aid. I have a lot of pages of hysterical testimony, but I'll, in the interests of time, I will simply say this. This bill, just to be clear, is the holy grail of deregulation. And if this would become law, there simply would be no regulations. In a nutshell, I mean, what we're doing here is bringing this bar down very low. And, you know, we do know in some other industries, which are well known for their prices and service quality, that's where we're going with this. In a nutshell, if this bill becomes law, not only wouldn't there be any umpire to enforce the rules, there simply wouldn't be any rules. We oppose it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Elwood. All right. Straight to the point. Ms. Hollick, if you don't mind restating your name.
I endeavor to be equally as brief, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Pamela Hollick for Level 3. I'm also testifying on behalf of Integra to keep it very short because our interests are aligned. Let me just say we echo the concerns raised by the department and the attorney general. In terms of the analysis of what the bill does do, what it could do. We also echo the concerns with Sprint with regard to the wholesale issues and the interconnection issues. Let me quickly tell you what the bill doesn't do. The proponents testified that it would incent broadband deployment in the rural areas. This isn't a broadband deployment bill. Nothing in this bill changes the economics of what it costs to build broadband out to the rural areas. There's no grants, there's no additional funding, there's no additional money.
The other things that do get there are, you know, sales tax exemptions on telecommunication equipment and other things that this legislature has passed in the past and is working on again in a different bill. This isn't an investment bill. There is no promise of making certain investments in network in exchange for a declination for current and future regulation, oversight, or consideration of the technology. Again, it doesn't provide any protections at a time that the FCC is actually looking at bringing more things into its jurisdiction to ensure that our broadband networks work with speed and agility and provide customers with the service that they want. And there's nothing in this bill that modernizes your existing regulatory structure or oversight. In fact, this is the bill that would undo the previous bill that we just talked about, which is the more measured approach to modernize your telecommunications network. So my suggestion for this committee is to look at the more narrowly tailored approach, which was SF 736 that we just talked about. Review the legislation in the other states in the surrounding area that have passed pieces of legislation like that have made sure that it protects wholesale competition, that it's narrowly tailored, that it only declines jurisdiction over a limited subset, and that it protects the ability for competition to thrive. So take a look at those other bills before you do anything. But the bill that you really should be considering is the one that we trying to get to consensus on. So let's take some due consideration and look at what the FCC is planning to address tomorrow, come back together, and endeavor to choose which bill we're going to focus on, and I suggest it be not this bill.
Very well. Well, thank you, Ms. Hollick. Any quick questions or comments from members? Of course, we are running out of time here. Senator Sparks, would you like to make any final comments?
Mr. Chair, just thank you. I know this is some very technical and detailed information, and I think that I appreciate members staying in tune with this. Obviously, we're going to lay this bill over. This one's got a few more issues. I think we can get somewhere on the other bill. I would encourage members to be a part of those negotiations. We'll continue to bring the stakeholders together. And like I said, hopefully in the next few weeks, we can bring something back that we all can support and move forward.
All right. Well, Senator, it looks like you sparked a lively discussion today. So looking forward to that continued dialogue on this issue. And with that said, we will be laying Senate File 895 over. And with that said, we are concluding our business for the day. The meeting is adjourned.